Good morning. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large for Sunday, March 9th, 2014. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. The 21st Annual Washington Regional Gala, an evening of Arkansas country music featuring Joe Nichols and special guest Back Road Anthem, is Tuesday, April 8th at Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. Tickets and details are available at 443-5600 or waltonartscenter.org.
Ahead, we visit the kitchen of Jen Lewis, take a spin in a state-run mobile clinic that aids veterans in rural communities, and we meet a recovering opiate addict who has found hope with methadone. Those stories and more.
But first, the snow and ice from last week has pretty much melted, but it had quite the impact on the week's news. Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis has more in this week's Week in Review.
As the week began, the topic on the minds of many was the winter weather that dumped inches of snow and sleet over a significant portion of the state. With the winter precipitation came covered roadways, but Randy Ort, public information officer for the state's highway department, said that unlike some other efforts nationally, Arkansas crews are keeping up with winter.
We have not had any problems replenishing our salt supplies up to this point. It has been a very difficult winter. A storm like this one, you know, salt loses its melting properties once temperatures get down below 22, 23 degrees. So not much salt being used in North Arkansas, not much being used here in Central Arkansas right now. We're having to rely on other chemicals such as calcium chloride and magnesium chloride.
But not everyone seemed convinced that the state was keeping up. During the week, some motorists on interstates in Arkansas were stranded when traffic came to a standstill because of the icy conditions, and Governor Mike Beebe even questioned the highway department's response, saying that although crews may have pre-treated highways, the apparent trouble that the department had in clearing highways was unacceptable when compared to the storm response in neighboring states. And the winter weather also delayed the start of proceedings in the trial of former Arkansas Treasurer Martha Shoffner. She faces 14 counts of bribery and extortion for allegedly taking six payments of $6,000 each from a bond broker in exchange for the broker's company getting the state's investment business. During her arraignment last fall, Shoffner attempted to plead guilty and acknowledged taking money from the broker. But U.S. District Judge Leon Holmes refused to accept the plea as Shoffner disputed the state's assertion for why she took the money. Gwen Moritz, editor of Arkansas Business, has been following the case extensively and says that the refused plea will be a factor in the case.
The fact that she made some admissions like that in open court can be used against her and are going to complicate her defense on that. But I think, they're going to present evidence. We've seen a lot of filings in this case that give an idea of just what the prosecution plans to do and give hints of what the defense plans to do. There was some suggestion that even recordings that are going to be submitted in evidence suggest that Martha really didn't understand a lot of the business transactions that her office was doing.
Jury selection began Wednesday afternoon, and the trial is expected to last through much of the coming week. Meanwhile, Shoffner will later face a second trial on 10 counts of wire fraud that were filed against her last month for allegedly misspending nearly $10,000 in campaign funds. Another court proceeding this week pleased opponents of a law passed last year that was aimed at placing stricter requirements on the state's ballot initiative process. In an opinion Tuesday, Judge Mary McGowan ruled all six sections of Act 1413 are unconstitutional because of placing poorly defined conditions on petition-gathering efforts, thus hampering and impairing the ability of Arkansans to exercise their rights. State Senator Robert Thompson of Northeast Arkansas co-sponsored the bill last year and says the low validity rate of signatures from 2012 petitions led him to support the law.
A couple of petition-gathering campaigns ended in some troubling results where it was fairly obvious that a lot of the signatures had been fraudulently obtained. So the purpose behind the act was try to reduce fraud or or other misconduct in the petition gathering process.
However, the Secretary of State's office fulfilled its task of identifying bad signatures and groups pushing measures were required, as in the past, to submit additional signatures to meet thresholds for being placed on the ballot. David Couch represented the plaintiffs in the case and argues the new requirements are unrealistic for canvassers.
Say you got a groceries in one hand and a baby in the other hand, and you write your name on there and you ask the person to fill out your address for you. You could do that previously, but under that new law, you couldn't do that because you could only do it if the person had a disability, although it didn't define disability. And if you didn't follow that process, then you committed a crime. So it really put the petitioners, you know, kind of like, wow, if I make a wrong call on what is or what isn't a disability, I could go to jail.
The act also, for the first time, made distinctions between paid and unpaid canvassing, required entire petition sheets to be thrown out if just one signature were invalid, and required canvassers to register their address publicly with the Secretary of State's office. Aaron Sadler, spokesman for the Attorney General's office, says the office is considering an appeal and has expected the case might end up being decided by the Arkansas Supreme Court. And Crawford County officials this week announced that they think they may have found a site for a new county jail. John Hall, Crawford County judge, says that the 8.5-acre site is a vacant car lot on Highway 64 between Van Buren and Alma. Hall says that though 9 different potential sites were considered, he and other county leaders felt that this site has the most potential.
It's got a 4-lane split access road with an access straight across that can go in and out of it. It has got all the amenities we have, the traffic. We looked at 59 Highway North. But the traffic up there is so bad that it's hard for people to get in and out of it. For emergency vehicles to run that way, it makes it almost impossible without having some kind of weight or have some kind of endangerment there of people trying to get through the sheriff's office and different ones trying to get through traffic. So it was basically picked because that was the most logical one. It'd be the least grade work if everything's right, and it has the best accessibility, and it is right next to the city of Van Buren, which is very important. We didn't want to go a long ways out because we wanted to be as close as we could to the county seat.
The site would cost the county about $275,000, but Hall says that much remains to be done before the county can pull the trigger on the land purchase. Namely, Crawford County voters in May will have to approve an increase to the county's sales tax to actually fund the facility's construction. From the Harold and Blanche Kalk News Studio, I'm Timothy Dennis, and this is Weekend Ozarks at Large.
Traveling west on Highway 412 toward Taneytown. On your right will be Harbor Meadows, a planned residential and business community complete with fountains and tree-lined streets. Across the street, on your left, hidden behind a deserted gas station and other industrial buildings, you'll find the unmarked yellow brick building that is the Springdale Treatment Center. I enter through the glass doors on a quiet afternoon to find rows of empty black chairs. But at 5:45 a.m., those chairs were filled with patients waiting to get their doses of methadone. This corporately owned methadone treatment center has been in Springdale since 2007, though many don't know it exists. I certainly didn't. Since its opening, the center has seen over 800 patients pass through its doors. Methadone was developed in the late 1930s in Germany as an analgesic. After traveling to the United States in the 1960s, its properties for treating opiate addiction were discovered. Today, it is used for the treatment of addiction to heroin and prescription painkillers like Dilaudid and OxyContin. If truly addicted to these drugs, withdrawal is so terrible that many users use their drugs again or risk death. Connie Phillips is the program director here at the Springdale Treatment Center. She says a potential patient must be going through withdrawal in order to be considered for treatment.
sweating. They sweat profusely. They can't sleep at night. Very achy legs, and they jerk. Really bad back pain, neck pain, just all over. They just hurt all over. A lot of times they're throwing up, sick to their stomach, diarrhea. The flu times 10.
Symptoms are so severe that many are terrified to come off their drugs. That's where methadone comes in. It can take 1 year on methadone for a patient to stabilize physically, emotionally, and mentally. If a potential patient doesn't have it bad, the center will refer them to a 12-step program or residential treatment facility. Methadone is a long-acting pharmaceutical and can also be addictive. If someone has a chance to come off his or her drug without it, that is always the best bet. Many patients here have been on methadone for over 2 years. Some will be coming here for life. But that typically isn't the case.
And that's always our goal, is to be able to eventually get everyone off of methadone and to detox them very slowly. At the same time, they're starting to get new friends and new places to go, get jobs. A lot of people come here and they don't have a job, and within a week or two, they're able to go out and work again.
The center currently has about 210 patients. Many come in every day to receive their daily dose. There are four phases of treatment. The first, phase one, patients are required to take a weekly drug test to ensure that they aren't still using. Treatment is more than just a dose. There are five counselors staffed here, and patients are required to meet with them, in addition to attending group sessions. After a 90-day period, if someone is doing well, they can phase up and come in perhaps every 4 days and take home some doses. To take them home, the doses are placed in a locked bag for transport and must be kept locked when they reach their homes. Just as the DEA, Drug Enforcement Agency, regulates the center, it conducts callbacks to regulate take-homes. A patient has 24 hours to bring in their doses for a check to make sure they have the quantity they should have and that the seals on the liquid doses have not been tampered with. Two pharmacists come in 2 nights a week to portion out the doses, and two full-time licensed practical nurses, or LPNs, pass them out to patients each and every day from 5:45 a.m. to 10:30 a.m., and again from noon to 1 o'clock, from inside the med room and through one of two dosing windows. Though I'm not allowed inside, Phillips opens the door to the med room using one key from a ring that holds many.
I can find the right. I'm getting too many keys to keep up with here. But this is where the nurses are, and of course we're highly monitored. We have cameras everywhere. I can watch everything that's going on here. We keep all the medicine locked up in a safe, and the money in a safe, and we're highly regulated by the DEA and the state of Arkansas for treatment centers, and CARF, the national accreditation.
Methadone is also regulated under the Americans with Disabilities Act. Many patients are referred by other agencies such as hospitals or mental health professionals. Some, a parole or probation officer. But most come through word of mouth.
People see their friends who used to be opiate addicts getting clean and doing really well. and they spread the word, and they'll tell them, hey, you need to go to the methadone clinic. And so, by far, I think most of our people are referred by other people or somebody they knew that went here.
That is how one patient, Corey, he declined to give his last name, came to the treatment center 2 years ago.
He kind of filled us in on what happens here. And, you know, like I said, I was kind of afraid to come here at first. I didn't know. Honestly, I wasn't afraid of coming here. I was afraid of, I guess, leaving the addiction. Afraid of being sick, if it would make me sick to come here. I didn't know really much about methadone or methadone treatment, anything like that. So,
like many opiate users of the day, Corey's addiction began with an injury. He was successful, working two jobs when he hurt his back.
When I first started doing pills, I had back problems, and I got prescribed to just hydrocodones, and then I moved on to something bigger and better, and started taking them the wrong way, the way you're not supposed to take them. I was snorting them, and I was taking oxycodone, 30s, 15s, anything I could get my hands on.
Corey hit rock bottom. stealing from his mother to pay for drugs, neglecting his girlfriend at the time, now his wife, and their newborn baby. Drug tests at the center cost $12. And remember, patients must take one each week. And a daily dose is $14. In total, it is about a $110 weekly expense to be a methadone patient. The center does not take insurance, though some companies will reimburse their clients. But compared to the $200 to $300 a day Corey was spending on the street to get pills, it's a bargain. He isn't trading one addiction for another. Methadone users don't get high and are allowed to drive, work, care for their families, anything everyone else is allowed to do. And patients cannot be discriminated against for their use. Methadone also acts as an opiate blocker, filling up the spot in the drug's receptors in the brain so that if a patient were to snort a pill of OxyContin or to take a hit of heroin, the drugs would have no effect on them. Without this methadone treatment center, Corey says he'd be in jail or dead. Without his now 5-year-old child and now another baby.
Looking back and seeing what all I was doing, I stole from my mom. I hit rock bottom, you know. That's really why I came through the front door, was I hit rock bottom and I wanted to get back up. Once you're up and hit rock bottom, you start to look back and you're like, man, I want this back. And, you know, finally I'm there. You know, I got it back. And it's good. It's really good.
The center keeps pictures in their computer of patients on their first day here. It pops up every time they come in. Corey wishes they'd change his. He was just 140 pounds, way too skinny for his tall frame, his face covered in sores. Now he looks healthy. And though he didn't say his current weight, he says he's getting fat. He has a different group of friends and is happy to work every day and raise his young family. He looks forward to the day when he will be free from methadone as well. Though, as Connie Phillips says, it will be a long road to freedom.
This will be with them for the rest of their life, because their brain has been changed. It's been altered. And there are times when, something might trigger a craving or a desire or, a death in the family sometimes. So we try to work on coping skills so they can learn how to cope with life.
One of Phillips' main concerns with the center is getting the word out about the good work they do in the community and the truth about methadone treatment. Though a light painkiller, it is not a serious help with pain. If a methadone patient breaks their leg and heads to the ER, they are not drug-seeking. They are in pain like any other human. Also, if someone were to become pregnant while addicted to an opiate, methadone treatment is their best bet for a successful pregnancy and a healthy baby. To quit something cold turkey could kill the baby, and the effects of methadone on a child are significantly less than an alternative. In an effort to educate, the center welcomes counseling interns and student nurses. Phillips sees their community growing, and the center is expanding further into the building they occupy. New offices for more counselors will be available, in addition to a more private room for group sessions. By the end of this year, Phillips anticipates serving upwards of 300 patients. For more information, visit methadonetreatmentcenter.com and search for Springdale. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large.
I'm Bob Garfield. On this week's On the Media, an investigative journalism center in Crimea sends out a Mayday signal as it's being raided by goons. Supporters here do the only thing they can.
You sort of feel helpless here in the States, but this was one small concrete thing we can do. We have digitally archived their entire record of publishing.
Don't miss this week's On the Media from WNYC.
That's this morning at 11 on KUAF.
The Veterans Administration has a collection of rolling offices designed to better help the needs of combat vets, especially the veterans in rural locations far away from a VA hospital or clinic. One such mobile veteran center is stationed in Fayetteville. But as Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums found out last week, the mobile vet center is out on the road most of the time.
Birch Farley is a retired Army paratrooper, a 3-time graduate of the University of Arkansas, and the driving force, literally, behind the Mobile Veterans Center that travels all over the state to offer readjustment counseling for combat veterans and their families.
The baseline functional purpose of the Mobile Vet Center is to identify veterans in need of vet center services specifically.
The Mobile Vet Center is a 38-foot RV set up as a rolling unit to reach out to combat veterans.
That said, I get more inquiries probably than anything about who do I see to file a claim for service-connected disability ratings, or who do I see to get this issue resolved? And that's why I say I'm in the information business. And so if we have a veteran in Ryzen, Arkansas, or Monticello or somewhere that wants to come on board, all they have to do is identify the time I'm going to be at a certain location. And it doesn't have to be in their county. If they want to drive to the next county and I'm there, it's a walk-in basis. We don't turn any veteran or family member away. And even if the veteran does not specifically qualify for Vet Center counseling services per se, we still welcome all those veterans on the vehicle.
The Mobile Center is a traveling extension of the Vet Center that's located in the Evelyn Hills Shopping Center in Fayetteville. Birch Farley drives the Mobile Center all over the state. Officially, he's a readjustment counseling technician with rehab counseling services of the VA. He boils that title down to this. He's in the information business.
But I try to identify veterans in need and funnel those individuals to the appropriate service provider, whomever that might be.
The Mobile Vet Center, headquartered in Fayetteville, is part of a national fleet. The Mobile Centers, according to the Veterans Administration, are outreach resources designed to interact with veterans in rural communities or at special events like the annual Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue Festival in Northwest Arkansas. The Veterans Administration has two hospitals in Arkansas, Little Rock and Fayetteville, as well as a few community-based outpatient clinics throughout the state. But these resources are still relatively finite in terms of accessibility. Birch Farley says a mobile center can help alleviate some of the travel challenges for vets in the most rural parts of Arkansas.
For example, I cover southern Arkansas all the way down to the Louisiana border. And for some of the veterans down there, to make it to the closest vet center or a VA hospital, it might be a 2.5 to 3 hour drive one way for those individuals. So it's a little bit cumbersome for a lot of folks.
Birch's territory covers more than 2/3 of the counties in the state and parts of southern Missouri as well. He's been the man behind the wheel for about 16 months and says his schedule has kept him on the road for most of that time. During one 9-month time frame last fiscal year, he put 14,000 miles on the RV. This month's schedule, a schedule he aptly describes as robust, has him in 18 different cities. This week, he was scheduled to set up shop across Northwest Arkansas. And then, by the end of March, he's scheduled to have also parked the Mobile Center in Batesville, Searcy, Fordyce, Lone Oak, El Dorado, and elsewhere. In some of the smallest towns, he sets up at the county courthouse or perhaps at a Walmart.
I try to focus my effort in some of the small towns where maybe the largest public notoriety or the largest people flow of traffic would be. For example, you go into some of these little towns and it might literally be the courthouse at the county seat is the predominant fixture, if you will, or people attraction, if you will, in that entire county. Sometimes it's a Walmart, literally. I mean, it seems seemingly everybody's got to go to Walmart at least once a day. And the beauty of what I do in those rural towns is I can have that mobile vet center set up, for example, in a Walmart parking lot or at a county courthouse parking lot. And a veteran will see that and stop and talk to me and say, well, what are you doing? What do you offer? And then the phones will light up. They'll get on the phone and call another veteran and then call another veteran. And usually within an hour to an hour and a half, folks start trickling through the door of the bus.
Bert says he's had as many as 20 people in the RV at one time in some rural areas. The Traveling Center is a taxpayer-supported resource and is designed to be adapted into several uses in case of emergency, including a temporary doctor's office or a triage center.
For example, when the tornadoes hit Oklahoma City, they took them up there and used them in whatever capacity. I don't know if it was strictly a counseling capacity.
The stop in each city is scheduled to last from 10 until 2:30, and Birch says the VA is trying harder to alert combat veterans with questions about counseling and post-war needs that it's approaching to their city. Unfortunately, weather cancellations can alter the schedule, and getting missed appointments rescheduled can be problematic because of the tight schedule and the downtime needed for maintenance on the vehicle. But when Birch does get to a town, he says he thinks his experience as an Army paratrooper and his college degrees can provide help.
A former combat veteran myself, and significant to this also is that I'm a three-time grad from University of Arkansas, and one of my graduate degrees is in rehabilitation counseling. And I spent 5 years working on the employment counseling and vocational counseling side with a different, with a state agency. So I sort of have a kinship to this whole process that's unique, I think, and probably separates me from a lot of folks that even do what I do nationally, just because I have so many different, if you would, layers to my own existence in the veteran population.
Weather and road conditions allowing, Birch Farley and the Mobile Vet Center should be in Jasper tomorrow, Huntsville Friday, and in Cassville, Missouri on Saturday.
I suppose you could say that every veteran that's been on the bus since I've been driving it for 16 months has indicated that it was a resource worthy of being fielded and out in the rural communities. The biggest negative or downside issue to the Mobile Vet Center is that I cover so many counties, and I have an operational mandate to go to each county annually. Well, you can understand one vehicle that covers essentially the bulk of the entire state of Arkansas, I'm spread pretty thin from the standpoint of I can't be in a county repetitively like every month or every couple of months or twice a quarter or whatever the case may be. And so that in and of itself makes it a little challenging. What Rehab Counseling Services nationally is trying to do, in fact, it starts March 1st. It's referred to as boots on the ground. Nationwide, the mobile vet centers are tasked to hit every county in each of their catchment areas within a 12-month span.
For Ozarks at Large, I'm Kyle Kellums.
This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Time now for a montage.
It is our Sunday morning montage. On this day, back in 1959, Barbie was introduced at the American International Toy Fair in New York City.
Barbie's quite famous. And she's looking good for her age.
She is looking good for her
50,
age.
Right?
Yeah, 50. Yeah. 55. Yeah. Did you play with Barbies growing up?
I did, actually. I think one of the first birthday parties, birthday get-togethers, I remember having in kindergarten, maybe. I think that was one of my first presents, was some sort of swimsuit Barbie and or maybe her sister or something like that. But yeah, I had a couple as a kid for sure.
I only had a couple. I was a little bit of a tomboy, but
right.
I did have a couple. Mm-hmm. And I had a Barbie Ferrari.
Oh.
So it was, this bright red convertible that Barbie
we did have my sister
in.
And I did have a dollhouse. I'm not sure it was an official Barbie dollhouse, but it was definitely pink and Barbie went in there. Yeah. So good enough.
Well, the original Barbie, when it was introduced, she had on a black and white bathing suit.
Mm-hmm.
And you could buy extra,
clothes
separately.
Things.
Yeah, you could buy clothes and shoes and stuff to dress her up in. But last month, it was also the anniversary of Sports Illustrated.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of, I think, time for their annual swimsuit edition. And
yeah.
So they had Barbie.
I saw a little bit about that.
Yeah, you told me about that, actually.
I saw it online, and I guess she was in her original black and white swimsuit. So interesting choice. So, but Barbie's a very much part of the pop culture.
Totally.
So
totally.
It made sense.
It did. And so it makes sense to use that as inspiration for the Sunday morning montage. Here are 8 clips about Barbie.
Barbie, queen of the prince.
Do you have anything relevant to say?
Don't ask me. I'm just a girl.
So, Who's ready for Ken's dream tour?
Let's show our new friends where they'll be staying.
Folks, if you want to step right this way. Hi, I'm Ken.
Barbie, have we ever met?
I would have remembered. Love your leg warmers.
Nice ascot.
Come on, Ken.
This one is for the boys with the booming system. Top town AC with the coolest system. When he come up in the club, he be blazing up. Got stacks on deck like he's saving up. And he ill, he fail, he might got a deal. He pop bottles and he got the right kind of bill. He cold, he dope, he might sell coke. He always in the air, but he never fly couch. He a motherfucking drip drip, sell her all the drip drip. When he make a drip drip, kiss him on a lip lip. That's the kind of thing I was looking for.
I lost all my shoes.
Pajama fun party.
Everybody.
Who's everybody?
Well, Jam and Glam Teresa and Ski Sensation, Kira and Glitter Fun Christy and Ethnic Christy.
There's gonna be boys there.
Her clothes and figure look so neat. Her dancing outfit rings the bell. At party she will cast a spell. Purse and hats and gloves alone. And all the gadgets gals adore.
Barbie dressed for swimming fun is only $3. Her lovely fashions range from $1 to $5. Look for Barbie for every dollar.
Let's go party.
To see how you did on our Sunday morning Barbie montage, go to our website, ozarksatlarge.com.
On the next Celtic Connections, we celebrate St. David's Day with an all-Welsh program, with dance tunes and love songs and plenty of harpers. This is Brian Kelso Crowe inviting you to join me for Music of Wales on the next Celtic Connections.
Listen Sundays at 3 o'clock to 91.3 FM.
White Line Designs is an interior design company located in Fayetteville. The company's office includes examples of beautifully decorated rooms, as well as a spacious kitchen where it's not unusual to hear the sounds of avocados being chopped or fingerling potatoes sizzling in a Dutch oven. A few times a month, Jennifer Lewis teaches cooking classes in this shared space. Jen's Art of Cooking came into existence around 2009 when Lewis started it as a hobby slash business out of her home. Lewis often works on her classes with Pam Brandt, a trained chef. Lewis, who is self-taught, was born and raised in the Republic of Panama. Her great-grandfather was a blacksmith when the Panama Canal was being built, and her father also worked for the canal. She moved to the States to go to school, and about 13 years ago, she moved to Northwest Arkansas with her husband. Following the birth of their second child, Lewis decided she wanted to start her own business and was inspired by her love of cooking. Living in a multicultural place has helped Lewis expand her cooking experiences. Growing up, she says she lived in an area where there wasn't a lot of fast food options, and she often cooked at home with her mom.
My parents entertained a lot in the home just because that was just very, you know, a very normal thing to do. We didn't have a ton of family, but had a lot of close friends in the area, and so Christmases, Thanksgiving were all spent with our closest friends and having people over to eat, and so just going out to eat wasn't a major part of our lives. And I felt like when we got married and came to the States, it just seemed as though everyone entertaining was done outside the home. It was done in restaurants, so let's meet out instead of it felt like people weren't comfortable with, you know, having people into the home. So that was just what I wanted to do, to bring I just felt like in Northwest Arkansas, people had these beautiful homes, and we kind of just experienced that people weren't really utilizing them to their fullest as far as creating those beautiful memories.
Lewis recalls being inspired by attending a cooking class that was taught at someone's home. When Lewis was offered the chance to move her classes from her own home to the model kitchen inside White Line Designs in 2011, she says it created the perfect way for her to continue doing what she wanted in an inviting, comfortable environment. Having cooked for much of her life, Lewis has come to enjoy a number of aspects of this activity.
I love how it brings a family together. I really do. I think it's such an important part of our lives, socially. I think, obviously, for our health. I think that we have gotten away from that as Americans. I think that I enjoy creating something from, you know, just seeing what's fresh and available in the grocery stores and just figuring out what I can do with it.
Jennifer Lewis says she enjoys the creativity of cooking. She challenges herself with recipes and often reads cooking magazines and scrolls through Instagram for inspiration. Lewis says she likes to be inspired by a recipe and then put her own twist on it. While Lewis sometimes hosts open classes, meaning anyone can sign up, she oftentimes teaches classes that have been reserved for a specific group. For example, she recently hosted a class for employees of a local eye care clinic.
So this is just a garlic press, if you guys haven't seen this before. So you can put it in with the skin. And then,
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So you don't have to take the skin off?
No.
Well, I sure have spent a lot of time doing that.
And then you... Just do that.
Lewis says a typical class starts off with one of her signature cocktails, which she uses to teach participants how to blend flavors and how to make a drink with fewer calories. She then moves on to appetizers, a soup or salad course, and then a main course. Some of these courses include a wine pairing, and Lewis typically finishes her lesson with a dessert. While she does tend to create healthy dishes, desserts are often part of the 3-hour class because she believes life is all about balance, so it's all right to indulge every once in a while. For time's sake, Lewis does do some of the prep work, but participants are also invited to be as hands-on or as hands-off as they like.
My number one goal is for people to feel comfortable in the kitchen and to teach them techniques that they can use over and over again in a different way. That's something that makes them just feel good and confident that they can come home and produce something and not feel like, well, I need to go through a drive-through or I need to order takeout because I can't come up with anything, you know, that I'm really going to love.
At the end of each class, participants get a packet of recipes as well as shopping and entertaining tips. Lewis often discusses where she purchased certain items and how to substitute for foods you can't find. One piece of advice she has for working in the kitchen is to use all of your senses.
I have some people say, oh, well, it's cooking so easy because all you have to do is follow a recipe. And it is truly about being in the moment as far as using. If something says, oh, it takes 10 minutes and you smell it starting to burn within 5, then you better check on it, you know, or... if it's, you know, smelling like it's burning or if it's looking like it's not doing well, you've got to just be able to trust your gut and your senses to be able to adjust your recipe. And my advice is just not to leave the kitchen, you know, not walk away and make sure that you're aware of what you have going on and just have fun with it.
Lewis says it came easy for her to not be afraid to just trust herself when it comes to working with spices and melding flavors. However, not everyone is as comfortable in the kitchen as she is. For novice cooks who may have had some difficulties in the kitchen, Lewis suggests they just keep trying. She says it's key for someone to find out what they really enjoy doing in the kitchen and then expanding on that. For more information on how you can expand your cooking skills, you can search for Jen's Art of Cooking on Facebook. This is Ozarks at Large.
On the next Fresh Air Weekend, how 4 alleged prison gang leaders orchestrated a 30,000-man hunger strike protesting the system's use of indefinite solitary confinement. Also, Kevin Young reads his poems about death and birth. And we hear how 5 of Hollywood's most famous directors gave American audiences their first glimpses of World War II. Join us.
Fresh Air Weekend, Sunday nights at 6 on 91.3 FM.
Good morning. It is Sunday, March 9th, 2014. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And here with us now is Becca Martin Brown, features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
I don't always like getting up on Sunday.
No, who does?
But when I do, picture me like the poster, but when I do, it's because I get to talk about history.
One of your favorites?
Yes, yep. It is. And if you can also picture the Raiders of the Lost Ark warehouse.
It's a good movie.
Okay.
Remember at the end, all the best people are going to look at the Ark of the Covenant. And it goes into this huge warehouse. We have our own huge warehouse, not all that far from where we're sitting.
The University Museum?
The University Museum Collections. Most people don't get to go wander around there.
I've been in there once. It's cool.
It is fabulous.
I need to go.
And if you want to wander around there, you have an opportunity at 7 o'clock on Tuesday.
Okay.
It's part of Arkansas Archaeology Month, and the Cocosi chapter of the Arkansas Archaeological Society, look at me go, I think I said it right that time, is hosting an open house. And you can see all sorts of amazing things. Let me give you a little rundown. 5,725 Arkansas and Brazilian quartz crystals. 10,500 North American and European invertebrate fossil specimens, plus 4,800 North American vertebrate fossil specimens. Textiles, Arkansas crafts, glassware and ceramics, the fossil of a Pleistocene mammoth found northeast of Hazen, and 180-million-year-old fossil crocodile from Germany.
Huh.
And then there are Native American Kachina dolls and baskets and military uniforms and stuffed critters. It's amazing. And you can go wander around there.
When I've only been in there once, but you feel like it's I can't help but think about a night at the museum.
Oh yeah,
you know when everything comes alive.
Oh yeah. And there's I cannot remember the name of it. They've got a fossil, and it's not the Pleistocene mammoth because I can tell the difference between a fossil bird and a fossil mammoth. But it may actually be a reptile. But ask them to see it. I remember seeing it when the museum was in the old gym building. This is a cool opportunity. 7 o'clock Tuesday at the Arkansas Archaeological Survey Building at 2475 North Hatch Avenue in Fayetteville. It is free. Also going on as part of Arkansas Archaeology Month, Renewing the World, New Research at the Spiro Ceremonial Center, which happens at 7 o'clock on the 18th at the Smith-Pendergraph Campus Center in Fort Smith. And Celebrate Archaeology Day, which is hosted by the UA Fayetteville Arkansas Archaeological Survey Station. That will be from 11 to 2 on March 29th at Agri Park, and they're going to have demonstrations of basket weaving and flint knapping, and they're going to do artifact identification. So much coolness. And also this afternoon, if you forgot, the Jesse Lynch Jazz Performance at 2 at the Arend Arts Center in Bentonville. And we've got talent with John Two Hawks as the headliner and a bunch of musical performers at 2:30 at the Eureka Springs City Auditorium.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Candy Lee's new CD will be released later this month. The Fayetteville-based singer-songwriter selected two venues for the release of Human Conditions. The first will be Thursday, March 27th at George's Majestic Lounge in Fayetteville. The second release party will be Sunday, March 30th at the Greenhouse Grill. She recently came to the Furman Garner Performance Studio here at KUAF to play some music from that new CD. The song is titled Broken Branches.
Branches rise above the rest of them all. And
and its leaves catch the sunlight and cause it to grow ever larger, but in its shadow, no other trees can grow. Oh, oh, oh. Broken branches all around, broken branches, broken branches on the ground. Creature on the earth, evolved but dumb, increasing in numbers but stuck in a rut, ignorant to its surroundings, distracted by itself, sacrificing other life to power and wealth. Oh, 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 well, the creature till it threw off the balance and its carelessness became its own demise. Broken branches, broken branches all around. Broken branches, broken branches on the ground. Years went by and the trees survived and the trees around it flourished. Well, they grew high as they caught sunlight and their roots below were nourished from the broke down, broken branches. So goes this beautiful, horrible cycle. Life feeds on life, and so is the mistake. But it's time for a cut back and regrow. And we grow, and we grow. So we grow, so we grow. Oh, we grow, oh, we grow. Together we grow, so we grow, so we grow. We regrow, we regrow. Oh, we grow, oh, we grow. Together we grow. Can't you see that it's all connected? Please don't disrespect it. I can see that it's all connected. I'm gonna respect it. Can't you see that it's all connected? Please don't disrespect it. I can see that it's all connected. I'm gonna respect it. And so what's to become of the creature? Only the creature can decide. Will it learn from its mistakes and only take
what it needs before it runs out of time. Broken branches, all around. Broken branches, on the ground.
That was Candy Lee performing the song Broken Branches inside the Firm and Garner Performance Studio. Her new CD, Human Conditions, will be released later this month. She'll play at George's on Dixon Street in Fayetteville Thursday, March 27th, and at Greenhouse Grill on Sunday, March 30th. You can learn more at her Facebook page or at CandyLeeMusic.com.
William Walton's First Symphony is full of his signature, slowly changing unresolved harmonies. Hi, I'm Katie Henriksen, host of the KUAF Sunday Symphony, Sunday nights from 7 to 9 p.m. right here on KUAF. Join me for William Walton's Symphony No. 1, performed by the Boroughmuir Symphony Orchestra, led by Andrew Litton. That's coming up 7 to 9 Sunday night right here on your source for classical music, KUAF.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and the Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Lick Branch.
Where is that?
Lick Branch is northeast of Alpena.
Oh, you're enjoying that area.
I am sort of enjoying that area. I don't know. Well, really, you know, we just heard from Candy Lee and her song was Broken Branches.
Oh, so, I like it.
Branches.
Well, yeah. I remembered we had talked about Alpena on Friday.
We did.
So.
We did. I know.
Well, I see that you remembered Daylight Savings Time because you are here. Actually, we're both here. I guess we should say probably our phones remembered to change the time.
Right.
Thank goodness that's automatic. I didn't realize it was so soon. I heard a story on Morning Edition, I think Friday.
Yeah.
And was like, I'm sorry, what?
I didn't realize it was this early either.
No, I guess.
Is it always this early?
I don't know. Yeah. It's one of those things that it happens, you know, twice a year. You change your clock. And I always think it's earlier. I always think it's late. And so I never really have a good feel for when the time actually is. So, you know, I hate to lose the hour of sleep, but I'm looking forward to more sunlight and the warmer weather and getting out there and enjoying it. And
for sure. Yeah. An extra hour in the evening will be nice because I find myself, not that it's bad to go to bed early.
Right.
But when it gets dark at 6 o'clock, it's, mm-hmm. you know,
it's all like, right. Oh, my day's over.
Yeah. It's time for bed. So, I mean, and it definitely feels more like spring is coming.
It's coming. It's yeah. coming. Again, I enjoy living in an area with four seasons, so I'm not at all complaining about having winter. However, this has been a very interesting winter.
It's been a long one.
And I always look forward to spring and summer. So, no disrespect to winter, Mother Nature, or any of that. But if this means we're closer to spring, I'm for it.
I do want to tell, for the listeners that maybe didn't realize it was Daylight Savings Time, maybe they're waking up expecting to hear the end of Weekend Edition and the beginning of Ozarks at Large.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, sorry about that. But you can go to our website and listen to the Weekend Ozarks at Large.
Yes, you can go to ozarksatlarge.com to check out in case you happen to miss this program in its entirety. You can also download our podcast on your iPhone through the podcast app or through iTunes. You can search for Ozarks at Large and find us, and you can listen.
There's the KUAF app.
There is the KUAF app also.
Yeah, so that's cool. Well, coming up this week, I know Chicago starts at the Walton Arts Center.
Tuesday. I'm excited. I'm going Wednesday night.
And you've never seen it.
I saw the movie, so I have a general idea, but And for me, it didn't quite translate. I think it was one of those things, if I'd seen it in theater, it would have been fine. But I rented it, and I saw it at home, and so it wasn't quite. It was a good movie. But I think it's definitely one of the ones that you need to see on stage to fully appreciate it. Heard of it forever, and familiar with the songs. And so I'm just really looking forward to a large Broadway production of it. Should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it will be a lot of fun. You'll enjoy it. I think I saw it here. It's been here before.
It's been here before.
And I believe that that's when I've seen it mm-hmm. on stage. I don't think I saw it on Broadway or anything. I know I've seen the stage production. And it's one of my favorites. And maybe partly because of the movie.
Sure. I mean, I know you're excited about John O'Hurley being in it.
Right. I like Seinfeld. Mm-hmm. I really do. Yeah. And he's actually going to be on the show on Tuesday. Our colleague Kyle Kellum spoke with him.
He did. So we'll have that interview mm-hmm. for you on Tuesday.
Right. Well, before we close out the show, I guess I should say Weekend Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.